Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. We got a studio full of people. Mike Cosentino is sitting across from me.
Here he is.
You want to introduce our guests, Mike? We've got two guests this morning, and we're going to focus on education. One of them is a legislator who's now running for the
Tom Chapin's in the House of Representatives. Representative Chapin is here this morning, and he wants to be a senator in the state.
And represent the Verde Valley along with Flagstaff and a
representing
whole lot of
the swing area of the Verde Valley. Verde Valley's getting a lot of attention politically these days.
Who's this other guy sitting here?
This other guy is Jim Ledbetter, attorney, and just happens to be president of the Mingus Union High School School Board. So one of our diabolical attempts here this morning is to get a legislator and who makes decisions, or at least about schools and education, and somebody who has to live with those decisions at a high level. I mean, of course, all students and parents have to live with those decisions, but Jim might be in a good position to show us.
Tom's been
a
crusader for educational funding and tax reform.
He has been on the Democratic side. He's been that side has not had as loud a voice as it may have in the past.
Maybe we can ask each one of them to sum up the educational system. How's Arizona education doing? We know it's one of the lowest amount of money of any school system. There's different ways to measure this, apparently. And maybe you can sum up a little bit of what you see as the problem in education, what a legislature can do about it, and how a school board relates to what our legislature does. And you want to start, Tom, I guess, and then we'll go to Jim.
I think that, quite frankly, this legislature has clearly forgotten that there is a partnership between a local school board and the Arizona legislature. And the fundamental question in this election, has the legislature forgotten that partnership? Partnerships is this. The local school board has a taxing authority. It can put questions on the ballot. But in terms of the operating day-to-day, whether or not a teacher's in the classroom, the legislature has to pull its share. The legislature itself must be held accountable. In the last 4 years, $3 billion has been cut from education in Arizona, and most of that in the K-12 system. And Mr. Ledbetter this morning can address what those cuts, how that has impacted his capacity to govern a school district and provide a quality education. And quite frankly, those cuts have been profound. As I put it, it has hurt every teacher and every child in every classroom throughout the state. And I'm very happy Mr. Ledbetter is here because he can talk about how those cuts have hurt the school district in Cottonwood. But let's apply the same example to every school district in the Verde Valley.
Jim, how is it?
Well, thanks, Tom. I mean, excellent observations. Where we're at right now in funding, the answer to that direct question is, in terms of dollars spent per student and funded by the Arizona legislature, we're 51st in the nation. They do put the District of Columbia in the calculation, so now we have surpassed a Mississippi in a race to the bottom. And we are now at the bottom in terms of dollars that come. And school finance, as Representative Chapin will tell you, is a very complicated thing. But once you get to understand it, all that complication starts to go away. School districts are funded on every level by different funding items. So, for example, this legislature recently said they're not going to be cutting the per capita student funding. Well, that's a true statement, but simultaneously, they virtually cut 70% of what's called soft capital funding. So what does that mean and how does it translate? It means you can't buy textbooks anymore for your students. That's what soft capital is. Soft capital is desks. Soft capital is the whiteboard that teachers use to write on. Those things are no longer able to be purchased by districts. So the state of the funding is really tough, and many of us know here that Cottonwood isn't and the Mingus Unified School District in particular, that includes Clarkdale, is not a district that's a wealthy district by any stretch of the imagination. But as we sit here today, there is not a single ounce of state funding going into the Mingus Unified School District any longer.
All of the state
funding has been cut back such that it's local taxing authority and property tax revenue that runs 100% of the district.
Let me ask you, they're not giving anything to the Mingus School District.
In terms of the Mingus School District's maintenance and operations, the big aspect of the budget that pays teacher salaries, that pays administrator salaries, that's what puts a textbook in a student's hand. Those things are no longer being funded by the state.
That was one of our intents this morning, was to just real quick, like you said, budget is complicated, but the school budgets are essentially divided into three. We have maintenance and operations, which is where salaries and benefits come from. Soft capital and the other capital budgets, and all of those address, like you said, he addressed textbooks, but we're also talking about infrastructure, and then we're also talking about on the M&O side of the maintenance and operations side, the wages and benefits of all staff, not just teachers. How is that part going? What's it like to try to get a teacher to work? To move from another state to work in Arizona.
Mike was a teacher in school system for 35 years, I should add.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
35 years? I didn't think you're that old, Mike.
Well, I'm well-preserved. I didn't have to put nails on roofs in the summertime in Arizona. So, yeah, my back doesn't hurt as much as it used to before I started teaching, quite frankly.
I do know about a lot of Phoenix districts. A lot of districts in the Maricopa County area have not had fundraising, in terms of additional revenues coming in. They're just in the same position statewide as all of us are. And their teachers have been frozen in terms of their salaries. They've been frozen for literally 5 years. We have not impacted that at Mingus, but we've been doing something differently. As a teacher retires or a teacher leaves the district, we haven't been replacing that position. So what does that mean in terms of students? It means class sizes get too big. Because we're holding the line on supporting teachers in their salaries, because frankly, teacher salaries are not enough. Let's cut to the chase. Let's be honest. We want to always say, teachers work a limited period of time in the year. That is just factually inaccurate. I've seen it over time. And our public sector employees in Arizona are not treated like they should be. Let's be honest about that. A teacher starting in a neighboring district who comes in with a family of four is eligible for food stamps.
Right.
I mean, that's the level of pay that we offer our teachers. It's not quite true with the Mingus District. The salary is a bit higher. But the reason the salaries, we've been able to maintain salaries, good teaching, continue to move up academically, we've been making some very difficult choices, and every day is a difficult choice. If a teacher is able to retire or a teacher leaves on a permanent sick leave, has a disability or something, generally speaking, that teacher is not being replaced. And that's how Mingus is doing the funding gap. But that's also meaning, 35, 38 freshman English students in a single classroom. That's way too high.
Tom talked about the legislature's responsibility, and Jim is talking about having to live with the $3 billion in cuts, and I want to repeat that. $3 billion, this is a state that runs on $9 billion, and they cut $3 billion out of education in the last 4 years.
I know teachers here, even in Sedona, who went off to Colorado because they couldn't buy a house, and they were starting a family, and they couldn't buy a house, and expenses are high, and salaries are low, and brilliant math teacher just left. And what do we need more than math teachers out there?
Let's move to the future, though. Tom, what can the legislature do to help this situation?
One is to accept responsibility and accept the partnership that we have with local school boards. I was at a meeting the other day, and we were meeting with Yavapai, Coconino, Northland Pioneer, and Mojave Community College boards and presidents. And so is my opponent. We were all there, and I asked a rhetorical question. Has the legislature been your partner?
Good question.
And when I asked that question, there was dead silence. And so the truth is, the legislature has not been the partner that it has been in the past. And that is because it has become distracted. It has moved its eyes off the ball of responsibility. So there's a great deal of discussion all the time about accountability, holding the school boards, holding the teacher accountable. And I'm all for that. But what about holding the legislature accountable? Jim will tell you the only place he can go to decrease classroom size is put an issue on the ballot. Shift the responsibility to local property taxpayers. And again and again and again, the last 3 or 4 years, what have you seen in the Verde Valley, in Flagstaff, in Payson, throughout this legislative district, but one override after another, year after year after year?
To that end, the Arizona Business Officials Association, School business officials. So at one time, and this is within the last 3 or 4 years, 90% of Arizona school districts were operating on an override budget. And now that number goes up and down depending on
who
passes the override and who doesn't.
And this is you know, the backbone of my public service is centered on tax reform and applying new revenue that could be realized to education to achieve attainable goals. And here it goes. Mm-hmm. We have $11 billion in exemptions and loopholes in our sales tax code alone. $11 billion. I have introduced bill after bill after bill to refer to the voters and say, hey, look, we want to sunset every loophole on the books. And when we do, we want to achieve 3 goals. The first is to lower the overall tax rate. So, as an example, when you buy a car, you pay a sales tax, but when you buy a golf cart, you don't.
Right.
Now, that's silly. So we eliminate the tax loophole on the golf cart, but it goes to lower the overall rate. So a car will cost less. The second goal is to reduce classroom sizes to no more than 25. Anytime a classroom reaches 25 kids, it shall be split.
Hallelujah.
That's a tool. That's a tool Mingus School District needs. And it relieves the local property tax owner.
Right.
And I also, listen, part of our real challenge in Arizona is higher education, where 4 years ago our kids were paying $1,500 a semester to go to NAU. Now it is over $4,000. And they are carrying debt that they will not be able to repay.
Right.
This is the partnership that I'm talking about. Now, if you want to take your attention, your passion to those of my opponent and take over federal lands and sell them, mine uranium in the Grand Canyon, put a nuclear waste dump site in Arizona. If that's your passion, if that's your objective, then what I'm saying is that you're missing the partnerships that we need to employ to make sure that we have a quality education system in Arizona, to make sure the kids in Sedona and in Cottonwood and in Clarkdale and in Camp Verde throughout the state has a chance, and that the state accepts its responsibility in funding.
So they've been so focused on these other things you're talking about, like nuclear waste and all these other
things. I really
things.
Would like to see a nuclear waste dump here.
Well,
I mean, I think that will really be very helpful. We'll defund the schools and we'll have a nuclear waste
dump. Hey, listen, let's just throw one other distraction out there.
Sure.
Per capita spending, every man, woman, and child in Arizona pays $371 a year for our correction system.
Huh.
We're number one in the nation. The second, Delaware, pays $280, $100 less per capita. On average, it's about $150.
They have to keep a warning private prison.
Well, hold on. And they're more expensive to operate. So here on per capita spending for prisons and corrections, we're number one. And what Jim said is right. When it comes to per pupil funding in the state of Arizona, we're dead last. So, again, if your passion is private prisons, appropriating this last session $50 million for a brand new private prison, forgetting everything else, If that's what your passion is, and let me just say at the outset, the opportunity for the voters in the Verde Valley is simply this. If I'm elected and two other Democrats are elected, we will split the Senate, or the Democrats may take over the Senate. Mm-hmm. Whether you agree with everything about what I stand for or not, the opportunity is to bring moderation to the legislature, to bring bipartisanship, and to get us to focus back on the real business of the legislature, including our partnership with public schools.
Let me ask Jim a question. Do Arizonans just not care about education? Why are we 51st? This is a moderately wealthy state. We're right in the center in terms of the amount of per capita income of people in Arizona. But we're 51st was a bit of a shock because I thought there were 50 states, but I catch that we are
under. Below the bottom. That's pretty hard.
Yeah. Do they not care, or they just don't want to spend the money, or they don't know what the legislature is doing?
Yeah. I think there's a lot of questions. There's been a lot of background noise. I mean, folks have thought for a long time that budgets are too big in school districts. Folks have thought for a long period of time that there's additional money that could be cut out of districts. That's just not true. But I hear that fallacy. I heard our superintendent of public instruction say that in the last week, that there's more still to be cut. I know that that superintendent has never served on a school board if he believes there's more that can be cut. We obsess over the budget. We look for every dime. We make sure that we are really operating as narrowly as possible. We've done a lot of creative things. Our administration, our superintendent in particular, has agreed to go to part-time status to save additional dollars. So what we're doing is not necessarily ultimately, in the long run, good for education, good for students, and that's what we should be there for. And the legislature has missed that because they continue to tell folks there's still money out there to be cut. That may have been true 20 years ago. There may have been some fat to trim 20 years ago. There was very little. And if you went forward now into this academic year and look at $3 billion collective in cuts, there's nothing left to cut. We've been cutting muscle for a long time.
Long
now
time.
We're cutting bone. There's nothing left to trim.
That superintendent is John Hupenthal, and a Republican that came out of the legislature, as a matter of fact.
And the public policy issues that Representative Chabon is talking about are extraordinary. Go back to Craig Barrett. He brought Intel into Arizona. He is the former CEO of Intel. He was repeating in the last month, even though he's serving on the Governor's Committee for Forward Education Thinking, even though he's serving on that committee, he literally says, in this environment of the lack of partnership between the legislature and education in Arizona, I would not have brought Intel to Arizona. That's happening every day. I see it in my smaller world here in the Verde Valley, where I have a small part of negotiating bringing good doctors to the area. Younger doctors have some reluctance to come. Even though our education system is good and strong here, when they look at the overall situation of cut after cut after cut and the fact that the legislature has not been respecting public education, that takes professionals and gives them a step back. And I can name by name a number of physicians who have chosen not to come to this area because they do not think the prospects for long-term education are good.
Look, they're just thinking of their kids.
As
they're
well.
Coming as well. So they look at our schools, they look how they appear, and they look at the academic scores, and, you know, it's all a phantom in terms of how the legislature measures academic success. They point to AIMS. They point to say putting a letter grade on a school. They point all of that. Well, let's find out where our children are. Let's go to the Stanford Nine. A Stanford Nine is a test that's administered throughout the nation. And when you get the results of the Stanford Nine, you're going to know where your child is compared to every other child at that grade level. Your teacher will know that. Yet we're fixated on the AIMS test, which is a shallow measurement of academic success. And the governor wants to put a letter grade on outside of each school measured on the AIMS test. It doesn't tell the school board anything. It doesn't tell the teachers anything. And it's oversimplification. And all of this comes back to nearly a persecution of teachers and school districts that are doing their level best to render a quality education to their kids. And also, right back to Mr. Ledbetter, right back to every school board, who's left holding the bag and increasing classroom size? And then what is even more and more painful, who has to put the question of an override on the ballot year after year after year? And it's there because simply it will come back to it. The legislature is not held accountable. The legislature will only point its finger back to a local school board and yet undercut the local schools by reducing funding. And look, we all know it. I think when I knock on doors, talk to people one-on-one, they bring up education. That is their concern.
From other candidates, Tom, that education. Jim, I assume that you and the other heads of school boards go down and try to talk to the legislature, and you try to explain to them what's going on. I mean, what happens? You talk to them, and they just don't listen, or they don't care, or they don't understand the connection between education, economic development in Arizona?
I think some people just don't believe there is that connection. I really, truly believe that folks discard that. Because at the end of the day, at least in recent years, what seems to have sold more at the ballot box is the notion of, I will not raise more taxes, I will cut your taxes, and I'll continue to do that. Without any implication of thinking about, well, wait a minute, what is that going to do to police service? What is that going to do to fire service? What's that going to do to the education of our children, whether they be kindergarten all the way through the 12th grade? It may be a hot topic, but this legislature has just cut all day kindergarten. That's not going to be happening anymore. Some children need all day kindergarten. Some children don't, but others do. And the truth is, we are losing our foothold in the world marketplace. That's who our competitors are. And you know, while we're talking gloom and doom about funding, let's be real clear. The schools in the Verde Valley are doing an extraordinary job, but we're asking teachers every day to do more and more with less. And at the end of the day, that starts to wear out the best and brightest, because we don't have people going into education to earn a living. We have people going into education because they're committed to be educators. So that's what's left. And I mean, I could take an example from Mingus just a few months ago. We had a very bright young engineering teacher, and we've brought to the curriculum engineering. That's what needs to be happening in the world marketplace at the high school level.
Wow.
Engineering. But we have an engineer, great teacher, doing real well in the classroom. He gets an offer as a multiple-year teacher. He gets an offer to leave and go into business, and it's five times his salary.
Five times.
And so it's so hard to tell a young teacher who's raising a family, stay here, keep doing what you're doing, offer engineering training to students at the high school level. It's tough because there's a lot of pressures, and I don't regret anybody for going out and making that decision to go out into the marketplace elsewhere, but it's very, very tough. And those who are left are the dedicated educators who are working hard, who are having to teach to a test today, right, as opposed to teaching kids to think. But all that said, they're doing a great job in the Verde Valley, so we need almost a big shout-out to the teachers here who hung in here despite what's going on.
Let me just add to that. You know, my late wife taught 20 years. So I've said again and again that, you know, teaching really isn't a profession. Of course it is, but really isn't. It's a vocation. We've all had teachers in our lives who have had a gift. We all remember teachers who taught us or compelled us or made us do something we didn't want to do, but we learned, and have had a lifelong appreciation for their impact in our lives. Those people are in our classrooms today. They're not a thing of the past. They are absolutely committed. It is beyond profession. It is a gift. It is a vocation. It is their desire. And I'm afraid that the legislature has, in turn, pointed a finger back to a teacher and their failure. And let me just say, let me finish this. When we're dead last in classroom funding and the legislature is responsible for it, and you turn around and you blame a teacher,
That's my question. Why do they blame the teachers rather than why are they focusing on the teachers? Why this sort of hate at the teachers?
I don't know that it's a hate, but when the system is not making the grade, you've got to blame someone. And if you're not going to accept your own responsibility for the situation at hand, and if you are ideologically driven to believe that you don't have to make an investment through public education, then who else are you going to blame? If you're going to live in denial, I will ask Jim, has the legislature been a partner with local school boards? And what happens is, I mean, I'm down there, I live it, I breathe it. What happens is that when these real situations come up, and Mr. Ledbetter or a superintendent from Yuma or a superintendent from Payson comes and says, you know, I had to close a school. What is the response? The response is, gee, it's tough. But in reality, we think things are better off if we just cut spending. So where does that leave Jim? Where does it leave your principals? Where does it leave your teachers? Where does it leave your kids? In the end, it's higher local property taxes just to do a minimal job. And not that the quality, not that we don't have the teachers who have the vocation, but not that we don't have the dedication, and not that we don't have the local leadership on the school board, but they are left holding the bag. And I just tell you that there's just a deaf ear at the legislature, in the current leadership today, on its responsibility, the legislature's responsibility, to adequately fund schools.
In the time we have left, Tom Chabon is who's talking right now, and he's a friend of education in the Arizona legislature.
And he's running for a state senate in the Verde Valley.
And he's having,
I think,
some
he's
problems.
Been very, very eloquent about the situation. I think Jim has been very eloquent about the situation that he faces as a nonpartisan member of the school board. And the position he's been put in, the position all of this, these cuts put all our school boards in, all our teachers in. We've got a couple of minutes left. Jim, you want to kind of sum up where we are? What can we do? And then we'll go to Tom, and Mike should say something because, you know, he was a teacher for.
I didn't let these guys go.
No, I agree with everything that Representative Chabon has said today. We have decided in Arizona that education in the public sector should be a local issue. I mean, we've done that in our actions, and the legislature has put us in that position so that funding has increasingly become a local thing. So people are paying more for their property tax to educate. We filled in the gaps over the last few years. We're sunsetting the penny tax right now. That penny tax is on the ballot again. Hopefully it will pass. Ironically, the folks who are opposing it have raised $750,000 to oppose through a public ad campaign that continuation of the initiative. That has to pass again because that's a gap filler that the legislature created and put out to vote for Arizona citizens, and we have linked education now to sales tax. That's a variable, meaning the more revenue that comes in, sometimes it goes down, sometimes it goes up. It makes puts school district in a very difficult position to meet their budget. At the end of the day, it is time to fund education with our future in mind.
Less than a minute left, Tom.
Well, simply this. The choice for the voters is simply, do you want moderation at the Arizona State Senate?
There you go.
If you vote for Tom Chabon, the legislature is going to focus on these issues and a partnership with your school board, period. Thank you very much for having us.
This broadcast can be found. Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Tom. This broadcast can be found on vvid.org. We know sometimes there's a lot of information in our broadcast. We have them on our website, vvid.org, and you can hear this broadcast one more time.
been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.